You're listening to a Countout Podcast.
What it is, what's up, and welcome everyone to Faces and Feels. I'm your host, Rafe Houston, and today I'm joined, as always, by my co-host for Anything Goes. It's the one and only Alex Castillo from Violence, Vinyls and Violence. Jesus, can't even get it out. How you doing, my man?
Good, how are you?
I'm good. How's that VXV doing?
It's right now not doing great.
I was totally setting you up for failure there because I knew you were like, I'm going to do heaps this year. And we're now on the 1st of March and there's been one post.
Yeah. See, I had a lot of like extra money at the time when I was like, let's ball out on this year.
Yeah.
And now I don't anymore. And I'm like, fuck. So yeah, we're right back where we were before that post.
Look,
we'll see how that goes.
It's hard, brother. I get it. You know what I mean? I love doing this podcast, but it's been really, really hard to fit it into my life at the moment. So those of you who hang on and are still listening, I really do appreciate your listenership. You can probably hear my gruff voice. I've been sick for about 3 weeks. I can't shake this shit. But, I mean, that's probably to do, you know, my own fault as well because we've had so much stuff on. We booked so many tickets. I feel like we've seen every band we've ever liked in February. And we've been to like, just in February, been to Brisbane like twice, just for weekend trips, like overnighters, you know, there's been a bunch on. But now, and this is a luxurious situation for me, I'm now on leave. So this is a long weekend here in WA. So today's Saturday, we've got Sunday, Monday off, and then back to work, but not your boy. Your boy's off for the 4 days of that week, and then the Monday, Tuesday of the following week. Because we are, and normally our plan would be, oh, what? It's leave? No sleep, immediately get on a plane at 5 a.m. this morning and be gone like hell for leather. Nah, we're not flying out till Tuesday morning, bro. So I got this whole weekend to lay around my house, slowly get organized, casually fly to Adelaide, go check out Slipknot Sideshow. We're not going to Knotfest. Didn't really care about many of the bands on it. So we're just going to go see their show. Which will be fun. We haven't seen them since they were in Sydney. Jeez, Paul Gray was still alive when I saw them.
Now, is this just them or is anyone else on this one?
They might have a support, but I don't know who they are off the top of my head. Okay. But we're just going to their own show in Adelaide because Knotfest isn't coming there, so that's going to be really fun. Then we're flying to Melbourne. We're spending a few days there just chilling out, going to see some sights, catch up with some friends. Then we're driving to Mount Gambier. Now, Mount Gambier is kind of halfway between South Australia and Victoria, and I think technically it counts as an Adelaide city, but it's like quicker to drive there from Melbourne. So we're driving from Melbourne to Mount Gambier, and then we're going to a two-day beer and barbecue festival that is just going to have awesome food, awesome drinks, and some great bands. Slowly, and DC Deathraiser headlining one night, and the Butterfly Effect are headlining another night. And so we kind of just went because we wanted to go to Mount Gambier, and see some cool shit. And then we drive back to Melbourne. We go to New Bloom Festival, which is like an independent kind of punk heavy kind of festival in Melbourne, and then we come home. So my body needs to catch up. I do have a lot coming up, but like despite doing all that, it's at the most relaxed pace that we've ever really traveled, if that makes sense. Like we normally try and fit a lot in, but this is very, very cruisy.
That sounds like a good time.
Yeah, it's gonna be very good. I'm gonna see how long that Mount Gambier drive is while we're talking. But I do have a fun story about Mount Gambier. I don't know if I've told you this before.
I don't think so.
So when we used to kind of be on the tour circuit as a band many years ago, we played Mount Gambier twice. We played, who did we go there with the first time? Maybe it was just our own show with like Day's End and Cyclopdick, or maybe it was with God Forbid. I don't remember. But we played Mount Gambier once, right? And it was kind of a weird show. They've got this old jail that's converted into like housing and things like that. And then out the back, they've got like a stage. And so we played the show and it was what it was. It was just like a local show and that was fine. Our singer was hit on by a criminally mind deficient man. It was kind of weird. We all found that very funny because he's the most awkward. He was quite a shy man. Not these days, actually, but James was pretty reserved back then. And so of all the guys that were there to have this weird thing happen to him, it was the funniest person he could have chosen.
Nice.
Yeah, exactly. But, yeah, offered to suck him off in the jail or something. Very funny. But the sorry, that cracked me up. Still funny to this day. But then when we went back, I think it was essentially 1 year later, we went back on our tour with Whitechapel and Cyclopdick. And that was a really fun tour because we were driving together, like each band had a van and we were doing it like you'd imagine you tour in the States, you know what I mean? Going from town to town and doing smaller towns and things like that. Anybody that's listening to the show that has never listened before, we actually do talk about wrestling as well, but I'm on a tear, so this is what's going to be. And so it is what it is. We're the opener. Sometimes there's a local opener as well, depending on, you know, if it's a bigger city, there'd be a local opener, us, Cyclopdick, Whitechapel, you know. Those things. So we come to Mount Gambier. There isn't a local opener. There's just us. Then the Cyclopdick, there's Whitechapel. The place is packed. Like, it is going off. We're selling merch hand over fist. We play our set. It's blowing up. There's a huge pit. The place is packed. We're like, what a vibe out there tonight. That is killer. We sold all our merch. This is sick. Cyclopdick play. There's nobody left in the building.
Oh, wow.
Like, there's like, half a dozen people, you know, like it cleared out. And we're like, oh, not a big Cyclopdick town. Then Whitechapel play, it's the fucking same. And Whitechapel are like, what the fuck happened? They're like, you guys should have headlined tonight. And we're like, we don't know. We've only been here one time. They're like, the only shirt I sold was to you. Like, I bought my Whitechapel shirt that day. And they're like, oh, do you fucking live here? Like, what the fuck is this? And we were like, we have no explanation for you. The only thing we can think of is it's probably quite a small town with quite a localized scene. And I guess the first time we came, some of the guys that saw us really liked it and bought the album and stuff off us. And then they probably told all their friends who told their friends or whatever, and they were probably like burning the album for each other. And like Discord just gained this like fucking grassroots movement in Mount Gambier. We never went back and capitalized on it. It wasn't too long after that the band broke up. So I'm like, I wonder if I'll be met with some kind of parade when I return to Mount Gambier.
Yeah, you got to make it known.
Yeah, exactly. Member of Discord on a huge flag or something like that. They give me the key to the city or something. But yeah, very, very strange story.
Do you have any of your old t-shirts?
Oh, I actually do. I have the merch. I should just take.
You need to wear one.
Throwing them out of the car on my way into town.
Yeah.
T-shirt cannon out the fucking moon roof. Like,
I would at least wear one and like see if anyone says anything.
Oh, I can't be the guy that wears my own bad shirt.
You can on this one time. I wouldn't say do it all the time, but this one time, go for it.
Yeah, maybe I should. Maybe I should represent.
Yeah, you should.
I don't even have one of the fucking good designs. We had some fire merch back in the day, but I was always, because of the movie PCU Pit Party, if you've ever seen it, I was always the guy who doesn't wear the merch of his own band or of the band he's going to see. And so, yeah, I never fucking kept any of it.
I didn't know about that rule until like somewhat recently when people were like, oh, you're wearing the band of the, or the shirt of the band that's playing tonight? And I'm like,
don't be that guy.
Yeah. I didn't know that was a thing. So now I like make sure I don't do it.
Which is kind of a crazy rule. Like, because
it is. I think it's absurd, but I don't want everyone to be like, look at that guy. He's supporting the band that's playing tonight.
Yeah.
And I don't know why that's a bad thing.
Yeah, especially since, like, we're all here to see that band as we agree that we enjoy them.
Yeah. I just do the complete opposite. Like, when I go to, like, heavy shows, I'll wear, like, my Orville Peck t-shirt or something like that. Like, I don't even wear the same genre of music.
Ironic.
What I'm saying now.
I just realized that I completely told a lie in that we're driving from Melbourne to Mount Gambier, and that takes nearly 7 hours. You can drive from Adelaide to Mount Gambier in nearly 5 hours. So I'm not really sure why we're doing it that. I actually do know why we're doing it that way. Now that I remember it, it's because we need to be at the festival, the New Bloom Festival in Melbourne at the end of the holiday. And I'm pretty sure Amy said that hiring a car from one city and returning it to that same city worked out way cheaper than, say, if we hired a car from Adelaide, drove to Mount Gambier, and then returned that to Melbourne, if that makes sense. Okay. Like, she was like, a couple of extra hours, it's fine. And as the only person in this couple that has a driver's license, I'm not sure I was consulted on that, but if she's correct, it will be fine. Like, I enjoy driving and I drive all the time. So,
I'm usually the designated driver also. So I feel that.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly right. It's cool. We 2 days. And also the festival has pass outs too. And our hotel is like not far. So we could like take a break during the day and just fuck off home.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's going to be crazy. It's going to be really good. All right then. Well, we actually decided to record today so we could talk about some wrestling. So let's do that.
Okay.
But it ties all back around to my travels, because recently I did travel to Brisbane to AEW's Grand Slam. And you just watched AEW Grand Slam on streaming. You've caught up.
Yeah.
So you have seen
it. 2 hours ago. Yep.
Yeah. So I have not watch the recording. I've only got the live experience. So we're going to look at it from different angles, which is going to be good. I do want to go into my trip a little bit, because I can't really give my opinion on Grand Slam without explaining the shit show that it was.
Mm.
Because I'm sure it looked great on TV, but the experience that I had as a fan buying my ticket and everything that happened and how poorly they organized everything really affected me, and it affected my enjoyment of the show. So I'll lay out the scenario. You guys wouldn't know this unless you tried to buy tickets or did or whatever, and you're in another country, so it's irrelevant. But when Grand Slam was first announced, it was announced as like AEW's first big show in Australia. And it was going to be at the Suncorp Stadium, which is a big football ground here in Australia, in Brisbane. Now, Brisbane is it's an interesting choice, because most touring acts and things like that would go to maybe Melbourne or Sydney, usually Melbourne. They're easy to get in and out of. There's more flights. There's more people there. You know, it's just the choice. Like, if you were going to book a show anywhere in Australia, you start at Melbourne and then work your way out. You know what I mean? And so it's Brisbane, and we're like, that's a bit fucking weird. But we're like, all right, that's cool. And they've gone, look, it's going to be a pay-per-view. It's going to be at Suncorp Stadium. Bang. And we go, well, why don't we get tickets to this? Because we wanted to buy my friend Travis. He's been on the podcast before, even back in the day. Listen to early episodes, you'll hear Travis. He's a great dude, and sometimes when we go to Japan, he'll like move into our house and house sit and look after our dog Mochi, and like he does a lot of things for us, and he's just a great fucking friend. So really wanted to show him how much we love him and appreciate what he does for us. So we bought his ticket to Grand Slam. We're like, when we got back, we're like, hey, we got a surprise for you. And it's like, we've paid for your ticket, blah, blah, blah. And he was blown away, and he has not really seen, you know, live wrestling in his life, you know, that isn't like back when WWE used to tour here or whatever. So he was pretty excited to do it, and we were excited to plan the trip together. And so we got it all organized. Suncorp's there. They had specials on it at like a really nice hotel right near Suncorp. And normally we don't book hotels, you know, that don't have zero cancellation and things like that. But it was like right there. It's a street away. It's a great hotel. It's normally really expensive. We just locked in everything. We're organized. Fast forward, we kind of don't hear anything about Grand Slam for like a very long time. No matches are announced. Nothing's going on. There's kind of no promo for it at all. And we're like, is this fucking thing still happening? What's happening? The next time we hear about it, they're like, oh, we're moving the venue because they haven't sold enough tickets. And I'm like, yeah, no shit, because you haven't promoted this in any way. There were some Facebook posts about it or whatever, and that's it, right? Like, they're not making a big deal about it. You're not seeing it on AEW TV. Like, you know, they're not doing anything about it. And they're like, oh, it's moving to the Brisbane Entertainment Centre. All your tickets will be moved. If you've got any issues or whatever, let us know, but it'll be sort of like the equivalent of what you've got.
Yeah.
And we're like, well, that's a bit shit for a couple of reasons. First is that anybody could Google this if they care enough, but I'm going to show Alex by pointing is if you're looking at a map of Brisbane, the airport is here, Suncorp and Brisbane City and our hotel is here. And then the entertainment center is back up here, essentially near the airport, you know what I mean?
Wow. So,
but further away, and also it's on a weekend when none of the trains are running in Brisbane.
Mm.
So you're talking the wet heat of Brisbane. You're talking about having to go we can't cancel our hotel. We fucking got that great deal. So now we have to stick with the hotel or just give up the entire fee and book another hotel. So we need to land, go to – this is after having 2 hours sleep after Lord Ashore. 2 hours sleep, get on the plane, fly to Brisbane, journey into the city, check into our hotel. We're kind of earlier, so we may not even be able to check in. They luckily checked us in early, so that was okay. We could at least kind of get ready and stuff. Then catch a 55-minute bus out to the sticks to AEW. And then somehow also get home again when there's thousands of people trying to do the same thing and the trains aren't running, you know. There was a lot of buses, which is really cool, not going there. It was just the normal route and we stood up for 55 minutes in a non-air-conditioned bus, like thinking we're going to die. On the way back, they had lots of shuttle buses coming through and picking people up. But we just walked past those and walked a couple of streets away and called an Uber because we're like, we can't be bothered spending another hour getting out of this place. We're just going to pay whatever the exorbitant amount is to, you know, ride share out of this hellhole. So as you can imagine, I'm already sort of a little bit annoyed. And, you know, I chose to book that a comp and that's fair and that's on me, you know, that's whatever it is. But you also, if a company makes a big – you know, declares they're going to book a big venue or whatever, I feel like they need to do their part to make sure they can fill it and actually do it. And if they can't do that and the thing is in a stupid faraway place, I feel like you need to make sure that the original ticket holders that supported you from the start feel valued. And that's also something they didn't do because they said, oh, we'll get you tickets that are kind of similar. And so if you picture when you're on a football ground, you know, there's the grass, they would sit everybody there, and then there's the first sort of rows of seating. And if I was looking at where the ramp would be, I was in those first rows of seating to see over everybody but to kind of be just above the ground. I was now up in the sticks over on the top left, which is fine. I had an okay view, but I'm no longer front on to the ramp. I'm now over on the left. And then also because they didn't sell out this venue in the days leading up to it, they were like, hey, all tickets, $50. So there were people down on the ground, like two rows from the ring paying $50. I was one of the first people to buy tickets to this piece of shit. And I'm up in the sticks for like hundreds. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
the move should have been, I think, is that when you change that venue, you go, hey, everybody that fucking bought a ticket initially, you'll be moved into all the premium seating and then we'll sell the ones behind you kind of thing. But they did not do that. And so as a result, I kind of had a little bit of a bitter taste in my mouth moving into the show. And I'm arriving there and I'm hot as fuck and I've been on a bus for a million years and I've had no sleep. So though I did have fun, my energy levels were really – and patience levels were really depleted by the time it happened. They also sold out of, I wasn't going to buy any, but they sold all their merch immediately. They didn't bring enough. All the things were empty and stuff. So there would have been people that were really disappointed because they wanted to buy a shirt or whatever and things like that. And then I think the final thing that sort of pissed me off is that AEW were like, oh, yeah, this was our third highest sold show in AEW history. And it's like, motherfuckers, imagine if you just promoted it. Like, imagine if you did anything at all what your Australian show could have been. Imagine if you put it in Melbourne. Imagine if you chose a good venue from the start. Imagine if you did promotion on AEW TV. Imagine if, like, you know, just all the things they could have done to make it good, but they just didn't because they left it all to the last minute. Whether that's true or not, I don't know, but sure as fuck felt like it. And I feel like as somebody that paid a lot of money not only for my ticket but also to get there, to cross Australia to go see them, and as somebody that was at their first show in Vegas, I feel like I get the right to say, you did a shit job with the show. I think the matches were good, but I feel like the promotion and the organization of the event was lackluster at best.
Right. Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah. Cause, and then I'd like to ask you your opinion from the outside turning on the show. Did it just look pro right from the start? Did it look like every other AEW thing? Did it look like a responsive crowd? It just all looked great or?
Yeah, I thought it looked great.
Uh-huh. The crowd was so loud. I heard that maybe over the mics and stuff you couldn't, and it wasn't their normal ring and stuff, which everyone was talking to you about, but like apparently maybe the people didn't sound quite as loud as they were, but it was loud in that venue.
Yeah. No, it looked good on TV. I mean, yeah, like I said, I watched the replay just a few hours ago. Whether there's been some, you know, doctoring up of the sounds or whatnot, but it sounded loud. It looked good. I mean, camera work was good. Me watching it from my couch, I had no complaints.
Oh, well, then that's great. You know, that at the end of the day, they got their, they got the product that they wanted to put out. And it was a longer show than I thought, which probably helped my enjoyment a little bit, which is not normally I'd say, but it started with like Ring of Honor matches first. And then it became the AEW show. But because I was like completely fucked, like from the heat and stuff by the time I got into the venue, the Ring of Honor matches sort of gave me a few to sit down and cool down in the air conditioning and start to become a normal person by the time they did the Kenny, you know, Ospreay match.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. All right. I'm going to look up
one of the last times, side note, but it just reminded me of this. One of the last times I went to a Ring of Honor show before, when they were still like, you know, their own thing.
Yeah.
That was back when, you know, Omega, Young Bucks and all those dudes were still there.
Yeah.
It's probably like 2018, maybe. They were up in Baltimore and me and my cousin went, and yeah, we stood in line to get in there for so long that I was so sunburned by the time I got in. It was so hot outside. That's when we met the Young Bucks that day. Well, they have like a little, you can buy a ticket and you use your ticket to meet whatever one of the wrestlers that were back there. You wanted to get a sign, pictures, whatever.
Oh yeah.
And we chose the Young Bucks because that's right when their Funko Pops came out. And I was big into collecting those at the time. Uh-huh. And that's one of the only ones I still have because it just came out and we picked two of them up and we took them and we're like, well, maybe we can get them signed. And we did. But yeah, I have a picture. I'll have to send it to you. It's me with both of the Young Bucks and I just look completely it's quite possibly the worst picture of me that exists.
I actually think you said this to me, a very red-faced Alex with the Young Bucks. Yeah.
It's real bad. I look like a homeless Make-A-Wish.
Jesus Christ. That's brutal. That is
it's
so brutal.
It's real bad.
Yeah. Were they nice to you?
Oh, they were really cool. Yeah. I mean, I hear they're nice. They were nice to me.
Yeah, they were cool to us too.
Selling themselves. Yeah, but I mean,
we met them. They came to Perth one time. They did like remember House of Hardcore? They did a House of Hardcore tour here where they announced like the first people they announced were the Young Bucks were coming. And dude, that was like peak being the Elite, like before AEW, Ring of Honor, you know, Young Bucks, New Japan, Young Bucks. And dude, like, it was brutal because everybody had merch tables on the left. They had a single merch table on the right, and they had a line around the building, and like everybody else had nobody. Cool. You know what I mean? And
that was Tommy Dreamer's promotion, right?
Yeah, correct. Yeah. And he was there, and Billy Gunn was there, and Colt Cabana, and all sorts of people. At that match, actually, the Young Bucks, wrestled the Spirit Squad, and it was a really, like, Kenny Dykstra and stuff like that. It was a really fun match, eh? Like, it was so
That's
good.
That's cool.
Because they were just there to obviously, like, job to the Young Bucks, but it was just, like, Young Bucks getting in all this shit kind of thing. And they were doing this, the Spirit Squad were doing the, who was trying to do it? Yeah, they kept, like, trying to double team the Young Bucks, and they do this thing where, like, one of the guys is in the ring and he's got his arm out, and like Kenny's on the outside and he's got one of the Young Bucks' arms, and he would do this and, like, you know, jar him over his shoulder kind of thing. He's on the outside of the ropes like this. Ah. And then at one point the Young Bucks managed to, like, swap Nick out or whatever and put the other Spirit Squad member there. And then Kenny Dykstra or whatever his name is has the arm and he's just going, yeah, yeah, yeah. And he's like hell getting him, and he's so happy about it, but it's his partner. And then the Young Bucks, like, just casually, like, walk around in front of him, and he's like, yeah, I'm getting you. And then he counts, like, one, two, oh, wait, what the fuck? Like, and then he realizes it's his friend. And I was like, these comedy spots are on point here with the Young Bucks.
I love that.
Yeah, yeah.
I've been to two House of Hardcore shows, and the Spirit Squad guys were on both of those, and I remember them being very entertaining, like, good comedy spots.
Yeah.
You know? And Kenny Dykstra has one of the best leg drops in the game.
Still. Oh, yeah,
he's great. Anybody says that top rope leg drop that he always did was so sick.
Yeah, he was great. That was so funny.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the show anyway opened with the Ring of Honor matches. So we had, like, what is it, 1, 2, 3, 4... 5 Ring of Honor matches before the show even started. So I'll just give you a little bit of a speed round real quick. So it was like the Learning Tree, so Big Bill, Brian Keith, and Chris Jericho versus Bandido and Los Outrunners. So they were so the Outrunners, but the youngest men alive, but in lucha masks. So that was pretty fun.
That's the one where one of the Outrunners did, like, the full ring rope walk, right?
Yes, yeah, he went
the
around
one, like, the everyone like had a shit storm on the internet about,
oh, were they mad about
for
it?
Some reason, you know how the internet works with wrestling. It's like
they post one
a comedy spot that everyone's taking serious for some reason, like, I don't know, whatever.
Everybody in the venue was having a great time because it was a funny match. Matters. They were being luchadors, like, it was, who gives a fuck? Like, yeah, exactly.
Right. Yeah.
Then Lee Moriarty versus Robbie Eagles for the Pure title.
Sick.
It was amazing. They're both so good. Then Mark Davis versus Tommy Knight, who's an Australian indie guy who's really, really good. Then we had Ring of Honor World Tag Team title match, so the Sons of Texas versus MXM Collection. MXM were so over. Amy's like, these are like my favorite fucking dudes right
I
now.
Like them a lot.
I like them so much. The Sons of Texas, I don't watch Ring of Honor. I don't know why this team exists, but I just can't stand Sammy Guevara. Hey, like, I don't get it at all. Love Dustin Rhodes, though. And then Ring of Honor women's title match, Athena and Alex Windsor.
Okay.
Yeah, and that was quite good. Athena's so good. Like, it was fun. You know what I mean?
Sounds like a good little like pre-show card.
Yeah, it was a good little pre-show card, and we were there for all of it, and we're having some drinks. But as I said, I was really fucking dehydrated and exhausted.
Yep.
So my energy levels were low, and I was like, just could not drink enough water. So of course I was drinking alcohol, and it wasn't really working out. But then. Classic. Yeah, the show actually starts, and we had Kenny Omega and Will Ospreay versus Don Callis' family, so Takeshita and Kyle Fletcher. I will say this match had a classic Amy 180, if you're familiar with that from any of my shows. Amy decides that she hates somebody, and when she does, there is no shaking them until an Amy 180 occurs. And then once that happens, they're her new favorite wrestler. And she was like, I fucking love this match, but I have no interest in whoever this Fletcher nerd is. I don't give a fuck about him. And she hasn't given a fuck about Aussie Open. She watched them wrestle at Sakura Genesis, and she's like, they're really interesting, but they're still like gross Aussies and I don't care about them. By the end of this match, she's like, you know who I really like? Fletcher. And I'm like, shut the fuck up.
Yeah. He's great though.
She'll say it like that, like she's just discovered the new coming of wrestling. She'll be like, you know who nobody's really talking about? Fletcher. And I'm like, oh, fuck off. And so she amuses me, but she actually really liked him. She thought he was like the best guy in the match. And I think he was. And I think it was kind of built that way. They really gave him a lot of opportunities to shine, and his strikes looked amazing. She was a little bit worried about Kenny. I don't know how it looked on thing. He was, you know, there was a couple little sort of botchy kind of bits from Kenny that you don't often see. But like I said to Amy, I'm like, A, he has been out of the ring for 2 years. B, it's hot as fuck here. Like, you know what I mean? It's a different type of ring. You know, all those things kind of come into – so he'd be knocking – Kenny's fine. He just delivered, like, fucking match of the year at the Tokyo Dome that will probably not be unseated for the rest of the year, you know? It just – it'd be a couple of little timing things and stuff like that and dealing with the heat and, you know, there's so many little factors, right?
Yeah. Yeah, there was, like, a botched – like, I think it's called, like, the Poison Rana, the reverse one.
Yeah.
I think it's – and the commentary team played it off like, Takeshita – He knew what was coming, and he tried to block it with everything he had, and he didn't get all of it. But I'm like, that's a good way to play it off.
I mean, to be fair, I mean the Poison Rider, but I mean, could be just as much Takeshita as Kenny. You know what I mean? Like, so because I mean
that's true.
You know, it's not like he's really doing it, but and they did the dual sort of toe pace to the outside, and Kenny's foot sort of touched the rope a little bit, which you don't often see
on TV. It looked cool. It looked like it. It looked like he put like a something extra on the end of it.
Yeah, you know? I think he had to not fucking die.
It still looked like on TV. It looked cool.
Oh, that's great. Then. Cool. That's really good.
I know exactly the spot you're talking about.
But I watched them do it in stereo, and Will is obviously Will, and Kenny was like, you don't often. Kenny, I think, has one of the best topes in the business, the way he extends his arms and things like that. He normally gets a lot of height, but he really didn't. But again, that's like. It wasn't their ring. It was some shitty Australian ring that probably doesn't have the bounce he's used to, plus he's dealing with whatever medical issues he's been dealing with. You know, it all just comes to things. So I wouldn't worry about it. Nothing to write home about. And, yeah, and it was a really fun match. Then we had Mercedes Moné and Harley Cameron. I couldn't really give a fuck, but Cameron.
You know, I thought the same thing. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, you're
but,
right.
It started a little shaky, and at first I was like, I don't know where this is going. I don't care. But towards the end there, I was like, this is an okay little match.
It was definitely – to Mercedes' credit, she just gave the entire match to Cameron, really. Like, it was just all about getting her over in Australia, which I think worked really well. I don't know why anybody cares about Mercedes at the moment. Like,
I was like, I have to admit, I haven't been watching AEW that much, so I'm not up on the storylines. Uh-huh. So I don't know what, like, I didn't really understand like why a lot of this stuff was happening. I just I don't know what the puppet thing is, but it was entertaining to me.
Yeah,
it was
exactly. I think just leading up to it, she was like mocking her with a puppet version of herself. Like that was like a Mercedes puppet. Right. Yeah. Anyway.
Well, whatever.
Cool. Yeah. Then it wouldn't be any kind of Australian pay-per-view if they didn't have a brawl style match named after the city. So it was the Brisbane Brawl. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I was also like, can we also just not do the green and gold branding and shit? Can we just have it be a regular show? Why do I always have to be at some fucking bullshit, like all Aussie colours? Like the merch, I saw people getting around in like the tour shirts and they were like, you know, green and gold long sleeves and shit like that. I'm like, I would never wear it. It's cool that they do it and these people are very happy in it and stuff. And I'm like, but can you just do cool shit? Why do we always have to have fucking the AEW logo with a kangaroo sitting on top of it or something? I got enough of that shit in my real life. Death Riders defeating Cope and Jay White.
I thought that was a pretty cool match.
I thought it was cool. I know Travis was like, oh, more of the same, because I guess that has been the Death Riders format for like quite a while. And yeah, he was a bit like, I'm getting very bored of it just being like any match they're in that they just sort of interfere the same way and cheat and win. And it's just been going on for a while.
That's valid.
He's just pretty ready for like a change. And I think the concept of the Death Riders is really cool. But yeah, something's being lost there. And it's probably because they've got Claudio in the fucking group. So I did think it was cool, like, his subtle shout outs to Warhammer 40K though. He's got the mask he was wearing is like kind of like a space marine sort of thing. And then
I was wondering what that was.
Yeah, exactly. And then the you see the wax seal type thing he wears, that's a purity seal. That's a Warhammer thing too. It's like deeds in battle, like purity against chaos and stuff like that. Like when let's get real fucking nerdy real quick. So in Warhammer 40K, the Space Marines and the Empire and all the, you know, the good guys or whatever are supposedly, you know, pure and free of the taint of chaos. And then there's many of like the good guys that turn evil and get tainted by chaos. Before they go into battle, they get like checked over and things like that. And if they're all Gucci and don't have any taint on them, they get it like a purity seal. Like to be like, he's good. And they can also do like oaths of moment and things like that where they get a wax seal on their armor and it's their fucking promises they're making of deeds they're going to do in battle and shit like that. So Claudio's just, you know, repping the shit that he likes, which is fine.
Yeah.
And it's also interesting.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, it's also, you know, if he, you know, a purity seal when you're a bad guy, you know, he's essentially saying that, you know, he really believes in what Moxley is saying, and in their mind, they're the good guys of AW, you know.
Oh, that's kind of neat. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is all new to me, but when you put it like that, it's pretty sweet.
Mm-hmm.
I was just going to say, I know how you feel about him, but I thought he was cool. I thought he was great in this match, and he did this one spot. I can't remember which one it was, but he, like, yanked someone off the apron straight into one of those European uppercuts.
I don't know how
it looked to you, but it made me pop. I was like, yeah, that was
It did sick. Look cool, and then he did the swing, which pissed me off, and Travis was like, it's his signature move. I'm like, I don't need to fucking see it. Like, but yeah, I did like the Moxley stopped it. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I'm too harsh on him. And to be honest, if I ever met him, we'd probably get on great. We seem to like all the same shit, but yeah, I don't know. I don't actually mind him in this like brawler enforcer role for Moxley. You know what I mean? I don't really want to like watch full Claudio matches, but this is fine. Next up was Okada and Buddy Matthews. I was like a little bit worried that Buddy would win just because Australian. And Travis is like, I want him to win just because I want Okada to be free from what he's doing now to do better things because he's sort of caught in this holding pattern. I'm like, that's fair. But everybody was chanting, you're a wanker or something at Okada, and Amy was unimpressed. She's like, what have they done to my boy? And then it was still a good match. Okada knows how to do a closing stretch better than most. For Okada, he was like, oh, fuck. I don't know how this guy thought he could win considering I've already beat Kenny Omega's movesets like 100 fucking times.
True. My favorite part of the whole match was the Rainmaker that he gave him at the end. It looked vicious.
It was absolutely brutal. And
it's crazy how, like, he doesn't even really put that much, like, oomph behind the hit. He just... I don't even know. It's so strange looking.
There's like a stiffness to it.
Yeah.
When like,
it's not like JBL where he like literally put like his entire body into the clothesline from hell. He literally just stands there and it still looks like you've run into a complete brick wall.
He's so really done such a good job with that finisher that like even if he hits it, you can tell if it's the one that's ending the match or if it's like a lead up to it. You know what I mean? There's a way that when he actually hits it, it's a kill shot. And they he's
speaking of finishes. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I have to go and say, what is Mercedes Moné's finish? Because that is horrible.
It always looks like a botch, no matter who takes it. Like it's very weird. Like I don't think it's very fluid.
No, like, literally just it's like her picking you up a little bit and kind of just awkwardly dropping you.
Yeah.
With no force or impact behind it whatsoever. Yeah, it looks. I've seen it a couple times where I'm like, okay, it was fine there.
Yeah.
This one looked absolutely horrendous.
Yeah.
Like it should not have ended.
I don't know. I think she should just go back to using like the bank statement.
Yeah, that was cool.
It made sense as like a, you know, a fucking choke out type finisher. Like, yeah. Because she's not a big girl either. You know what I mean? Like,
and I liked the setup to it, like the backstabber or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Into the thing. Into it. I liked that.
Absolutely. That cool. It worked fine.
Whatever this is just is not working. Yeah.
Also, she always does the three amigos to shout out Eddie Guerrero, but she does them like shit as well. So I don't, she should probably not do that. She's not doing him any favors. I will say about fucking Buddy as well. He works hard, man. Like, he's what a weapon of a person.
Yeah. I was a fan of him in WWE.
Yeah. I really liked him in, like, we're rewinding quite a while now. I really liked him in, like, 205 Live, where he was, like, the biggest guy in 205 Live. He was, like, a heavyweight that had shredded down to be able to compete there and bully the, like, fucking cruiserweights, you know.
If you or anyone else listening to this have never gone and watched Buddy Murphy versus Mustafa Ali in 205 Live, they had like three matches in each one of them.
That's what I'm talking about.
Are some of the best matches I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And they do not get the recognition they deserve.
No way. No way. They had a great series. They were cooking a bit in 205 Live. And like Neville was fucking King Neville at the time, which is stupid, but he was such a fucking shit heel. It was so sick. Yep. I used to love his entrance. It was so subtle. He would come out and it would say Neville behind him, right? But then the smoke would shoot up, block the N, and it would say Evil. Like, and I was fucking just so subtle. And like Enzo was doing, and this is crazy to say something good about Enzo Amore in 2025, but he was sort of like somehow got to be the champ, and he was like the champ as purposely the shittest wrestler on the roster.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, he managed to fucking get it. And he was just this fucking cunt who had no business having it and had heat because of it. Like, they had this great little tight roster of guys that were working really hard to try and create something new. And it just, I don't know, maybe in this era where, like, it would be Triple H running it and not Vince, maybe something would have happened. But, yeah, I felt like that Cruiserweight Classic into 205 Live, there was some real cool stuff happening.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. We'll talk about this last match, and then we'll actually talk about a piece of news as well.
Sure.
We got to touch on that Lucha Underground news, which we would go crazy about. So the last match was Toni Storm defeating Mariah May and winning the title back in Brisbane. Toni's from the Gold Coast, so the place came unglued. Very fun to see. Travis was kind of thinking that maybe she wouldn't win it back. That might be a bit early. And I'm like, surely it was leading to Australia. I mean, they could still flip it around and they could do other things. But like here on this day, she was the correct person to win that match, you know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Like I told you before we started recording, I didn't actually get to finish this match. So I don't have a whole lot to say about it. But I saw the ending. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you're right. That's, yeah.
The ending, kind of come a bit out of nowhere. I think they've had matches before that I preferred than this one. But again, I'm very tired, very exhausted, like in the building at the time. So my focus wouldn't have been awesome. I need to watch the whole thing back on TV to maybe get a real thing of it. But it was really good. Did you guys get to see her? There's no way this made air, actually. Her after match comments in the ring, Tony's.
I'm not sure. Like I said, I didn't watch all of right, it. Right.
So, actually, when I tell you what she said, there's no way it made air. So she goes, she gets they have all the celebration and stuff, and then she gets to the ring, you know, to thank everybody for coming and thank her mum for her support and making her costume and things like that. And then she goes, oh, well, I fucking did it again. She goes, I was trying to decide what to do as a celebration. I thought maybe doing the nut bush. She's like, but I've gone and torn my labia again, so I guess that's out. Again? We were like, what the? She goes, so I guess that's fucked or whatever. She was just being so Australian. So yeah,
I love that. She always has some out-of-pocket shit on there.
Yeah, like, yeah. So maybe it did make TV, but she's very funny. And I think that, I mean, I don't know if it's over. I haven't watched the new thing, but I think Toni Storm and Timeless Toni Storm and the Mariah May thing, I think is maybe the best women's storyline that's ever happened in wrestling. just because it actually got time to tell it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I don't mean ever. I mean, I'm sure there's been great stuff on the indies and, you know, and there are other things I can talk about. But in a major company, and I'm talking all Divas era and, you know, and all the different things that have happened and current stuff, I feel like they really just let Tony cook and got something very special and weird and drew in, like, a lot of fans. And I think at the moment when you look at female wrestlers in the world or popular wrestlers in the world, it's pretty crazy that two of the most popular wrestlers in the world are women, that being Rhea Ripley and Toni Storm, both Australian women, I think is pretty great. It's pretty amazing because, you know, women have not historically been given that opportunity. I think it's so cool that they have. I got a mate at work who's like, my daughter is obsessed with this Rhea Ripley. He's like, he loves her. She loves her. It's cool. And I'm like, don't we all? Like, that's really cool that, like, new wrestling fans and young girls are getting to wrestling thanks to these women. I think it's just so cool, man.
Yeah, no, they're both great. They definitely deserve everything that they currently have.
Absolutely. Like,
as far as popularity goes. Mm-hmm. Phenomenal in the ring, both of them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep.
Yeah. Some of the out-of-pocket shit that Tony has done has been crazy. The fucking idea that she went lost the title and then had some kind of mental crisis, which I think turned out to be a swerve, but, like, became old Toni Storm and then was doing all those series of, like, she's, like, changing in the hallways and just happy to be here and just essentially playing herself from, like, 10 years ago is so fucking funny and so stupid.
She said, this was my greatest performance of – you've all witnessed my greatest performance of all time.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's just ridiculous, man. Like, it's just really funny. Yeah. So, yeah.
Anyway. I like the way she talks. It makes me laugh. Just real – I mean, so dramatic, like over-the-top dramatic, everything.
Yeah, yeah.
I love that.
Exactly. Now, she's really great. When they did the – I don't know whether you got the shot, but when they did their entrances and they're doing the announcements – and it, like, they announced Mariah May, and then it flicks over to Tony, and she's there, and she's got, like, her old-timey makeup on and her lips pursed and shit, and you're like, this is so fucking stupid. Like, it's so ridiculous, but so amazing that it's even happening, you know? Like, it's just, really, really, really funny.
I remember when she first started doing it, I was like, this is the worst thing I've ever seen. What is this? And now it's my favorite thing.
Yeah, well, she...
Talk about a 180.
Yeah. She had to dial it right back in order to then build it up. You know, she even like stripped back her moveset and shit like that. She was doing everything real old timey and then sort of ramped it up. But she almost had to sort of like strip Toni Storm back to like nothing to then create timeless Toni Storm, you know?
I liked when she had that dude Luther walking around with her.
He was there. He's still there. He was there.
Is he really?
Yeah, yeah. At the entrance or whatever, he was like in the stand. He was in a butler's thing, and like Mariah came out, and then a spotlight went on, and he was in the stands, and she was distracted, and then the thing happened.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. He's still with her. Yeah, so that's cool. Former, you know, deathmatch wrestler Luther.
Yeah, I was going to say something about that. That's very funny.
Chris Jericho's mate. He was like, he used to do death matches in Japan.
Yeah, good for him for still being out there.
Still doing it, yeah.
It might not be what he wants to be doing, but he's doing something.
Yeah,
he's making money.
I'm sure he loves it.
Oh, yeah.
But, all in all, though, by the time it was said and done, we had a real fun show.
Nice.
And then we got out of there and, like I said, got through all the crowds and – I managed to get back to the hotel and then got up at a semi-reasonable time and then flew back here and then went to the Laneway Festival and watched Charlie XCX. So
nice.
and what is it?
Bray and Joey Valance.
Yeah, Valance and Bray.
I saw them on one of your guys' stories, I was like, no way, because I love those guys.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Cool. They were cool. So, and also got to see a few friends kicking around, got to meet the WeWork Stiff guys in person for the first time. We've obviously talked a lot over on Ichiban Sweetcast and done things, and we've got a group chat, but I actually got to meet them in real human space, which was really great to give those guys a hug and catch up and ran into the old Deathmatch Down Under crew. as well, and got to see Stu and Jam and Ryan and stuff. So yeah, it was good. We had a good weekend, and it was pretty tiring by the time it was all said and done.
Yeah, I believe it.
All good. And then they announced on our way out that they're coming back in 2026. And I'm like, well, you want to fucking promote it quite a bit better if I'm going to fly across the country again to come see it.
Right, yeah.
You know what I mean? Because my faith in them as promoters in Australia has been dinged. You know what I mean? So mm-hmm. I wouldn't be one of the first people ensuring I got a ticket next time, you know?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, they need to hear that. I doubt they care, but but that's it. But so news item in other news, do want to talk about that? There's talks of WWE acquiring the Lucha Underground license.
Yeah, I saw that. I don't know how I feel about it. Mm.
I don't.
To me, it just loses all the whatever you want to call it of how it was before. And I don't want it to be.
I don't even care about new stuff. I just want them to put the old stuff on Netflix.
Yes.
That's all I want. Like, and then if you guys want to create.
If that's all it is, I'm all for it.
Yeah.
But I do not want to see a revival.
Well, I mean, even if they do a revival, Lucha Underground 2.0 live or whatever, that's fine. Do it. But like, I will be, as long as the original episodes are up to watch, that would be great.
Yeah. No,
but,
for sure.
But it would that's not be the same.
Priority.
If they bought it and they went, you know what? We're fucking going back to the fucking original Lucha Underground Arena, that sick venue, and making it look the same and fucking running it like it used to be run, sign me up. Like, fuck yeah.
Yeah. You know, they would just do it like all like super high budget, and it would look aesthetically pleasing, but it just wouldn't have the same life, I feel.
Yeah.
I don't know. I could be wrong, but it's just how I feel.
If they did it like, you know how they used to on the network, they'd have like extra shows and things like that. If they went, we're going to do extra content that is Lucha Underground and it is not NXT related, you know what I mean? Like it's its own entity and we're going to do it in the spirit of how it was originally done. It could be really cool.
Yeah.
So we'll just
if I could bring one thing back, it would be – Southpaw Regional Wrestling. Do you remember when they did that on YouTube?
Yeah.
That was so funny. But I was thinking about that the other day. Almost every single person that was involved in Southpaw Regional Wrestling is no longer with the WWE.
Yeah. Except for John Cena, right?
For John Cena. That would be it.
Yeah.
He was a great part of it. So he could definitely still do it. But and Fandango. Funny. Yeah. As that commentary team or whatever you want to
Fandango
call it,
they were
so funny.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's fucking. There was another news item was that Carl Anderson was sharing some, you know, a Bullet Club thing the other day, and we were like,
"Oh yeah,
please no."
Yeah.
Not again. His last run in New Japan was rough. But the good news is that they're kind of phasing out the Bullet Club branding now. They've really been like, it was Bullet Club War Dogs and House of Torture. They've really been sort of like the Bullet Clubness has been taking a back seat, and the War Dogsness and the House of Torture-ness has been taking the forefront. Even as recently as the last pay-per-view, Evil like fucking attacked the dudes and were like, you know, War Dogs are not in Bullet Club or whatever. I own it. So I think they're kind of like trying to phase that out. And if so, that maybe bodes well for maybe not needing a Carl Anderson to come into New Japan. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
Yes.
I don't know. I'm not too up on all that, but I agree with you.
Yeah. Also, he kind of burnt them again after they gave him another chance. They gave him a title. They gave him a run. And then WWE were like, do you want to come back? He's like, yeah, sure. And then like came back while still a fucking champion in New Japan. Just went and made a WWE show and shit. And then they had to
came back over here and did absolutely nothing.
Yeah. And then they had to like fuck around to get the title back off him and get him back and negotiate a deal with WWE to have him and shit like that for this one terrible match. And it's just like, surely they remember. Like, you know,
right.
Like, that he chose to burn that bridge. Like, and especially after they left WWE and they were like, we got fucked over by him, we're never going back. And they're like, what about this money? And they're like, sure, come back.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. All right then. So shall we do, let's do our recommendations, eh?
Sounds good.
And in the spirit of, I'm going to go first, just so you don't cut me off and do it yourself.
Please do.
In the spirit of this episode, which has been talking about all our dumb travels, something amazing happened. Let Live have reformed and are announcing a final tour. They are one of, maybe my favorite bands of all time. And they are reforming. And in their final tour, they are doing all the major Australian cities. And Amy and I have bought tickets to all of those shows. So we'll be going to all their shows. So I am just going to give you Let Live songs to add to the list.
Please do, because they are also one of my all-time favorite bands. Yeah. And before we started recording, I texted you and said, are you doing Let Live or am I doing Let Live? So we were both on the same page.
We could just both do Let Live and add like a whole bunch of their songs to the thing. So
you can go first and then I'll maybe add one or two myself.
All right. So let's do Banshee brackets Ghost Fame from The Black is Beautiful.
Okay.
Would be a good choice. Then... they're all so good. Let's do the sick 6.8 billion.
Okay.
Am I doing two or three or four?
You can do whatever you want.
Let's do, should we do, do you like Renegade? I mean, they're all fucking so good. I don't even know which ones I like the best because I like them all.
I'm going to go ahead and just throw Younger on there. That's one of my favorites.
Yeah, Younger is sick. What about, yeah, let's do, yeah, you know what, we'll brainstorm.
they're all so good. More gets added to it.
Yeah, let's do Renegade later. 86 as well. That's good. And then, yeah, we can always add more. Yeah, exactly. But there's, check out Let Live. Just go to their spot, their stylizers, Let Live, period, you know, dot. And just hit play all and treat yourself. That'd be really good.
Yeah. And they also got announced for the Washington DC Warped Tour. And I have tickets.
And you're
to that.
Going to that, aren't you?
Yeah, I am going. Yeah. I'm going to see them also, and I'm very excited because when I discovered them, they are just started to announce like their last album, and then they broke up, and I never got to see them live.
Yeah, so right. Album. Yeah, we follow. We've been into them for a while. For the record, their main three albums, there's kind of earlier stuff, but that wasn't really like Jeff wasn't part of the band, who's the guitarist. And they like Let Live kind of became the Let Live sound that you know now at Fake History in 2011. And then Black is Beautiful in 2013, and then If I'm the Devil, 2016. That 2007 album is completely different. It was like different members and stuff. So I don't really
care. It's still good. I don't mind it, but it's not their new stuff.
Yeah, that's exactly for sure. Right. But yeah, we met them. We met the guitarist Jeff at a Dillinger Escape Plan sideshow when we were going to all the Soundwave shows. We're following that tour around, just catching all the festivals. We met him there, and then we hung out many sort of times during that, and it ended up with us being side of stage when they were here in Perth, which was really cool, and came really tight with him during that time. So I'm really looking forward to catching up and just seeing them play again, because it's such a great live show. You're going to absolutely love it.
I've seen videos of them live and it looks nuts.
Yeah, exactly. That's cool. All right. And then were you also recommending Let Live, or were you putting in something else?
I just threw the song Younger in. My first recommendation I'm going to do, I've been back on the Callous Dowboys.
Them. Actually, you recommended that to me the other day. That was really great.
Yeah, I discovered them like maybe two albums ago for them, and they were like really chaotic then, and I like it very much so. In like, if like every time I died was like had a little bit more chaos to them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But here recently, they're really were like polishing their sound, and I threw on their new song, "The Two-Headed Trout." Mm-hmm. I think that's a phenomenal song. That's like the first half of the music video that I sent you.
Yeah.
That's a great song. I threw two more songs in here too, because I couldn't.
So you got to do the other half of that video as well. Like, what's that other song called? Like, they flow really well into each other.
Yeah, I can put that on here too. The other song was "The Demon of Unreality." I don't know. It's got a long name. It's like cut off on Spotify.
It's "The Demon of Unreality," limping like a dog.
Yeah, limping like a dog. Yep. Yeah. So I'll throw that on here too.
Yeah.
But the other songs that I added are from two of their other albums, and I added "Star Baby," and I got to go back to it. I'm looking at it on my phone. Yeah, I added "Star Baby" and "Waco Jesus." That's from their past two stuff, and they're just as good.
Cool.
Yeah, I love those guys.
Yeah, that's so awesome. Yep, yeah,
that's my first recommendation. That's
really great. If anybody's real keen on that, watching the video is pretty great because it's like the two songs back to back, like an ongoing sort of video clip. That's really fun.
Yeah, it's a cool music video. I love music videos, and I feel like that that art is kind of lost.
Yeah.
So to have a cool music video that's thought out and plays well and it goes along with the song really was cool.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's good. I've also got to tell everybody that the Face and Feels Vinyls and Violence on the Road playlist made its live debut the other day. Because we had the first Dude, Where's My Ring show of 2025 at Seasonal Brewing. And I found out morning of that I would be doing the sound as well as commentary, as well as the keg or ring bell. The guy that normally does it was not able to make it. And they were like, "Do you have the ability to do that?" And I was like, "Bruh, I studied for this." And by that, I mean like I spent 3 years at the West Australian Academy of Performing Arts to learn to do all kinds of sound and things like that, and I don't do it very often. I was like, look, I can make it work, send me the thing and things like that. And I realized when I was there, I was like, oh, fuck, I need to do some house music. Maybe I can find a playlist on YouTube. And I was like, wait, I know of just the playlist. And I had several people, including wrestler Felix Young, come up and be like, can you send me this playlist? What are you fucking doing? I was like, this is my playlist. And yeah.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
I was about to ask you how I went over, if you had any.
It went great because it's got a bit of everything. You know what I mean? Yeah. You've got thrown into Serena Carpenter. Like everybody was loving it. A bit of George Benson into fucking, you know. It went over really well. People were really enjoying it.
That's cool to hear.
Yeah, exactly. So we've got to keep on building on it, I think, and try and think of some more classics to make their way in there, because we've got a lot of new stuff in there because it tends to be things that we're vibing on at the moment. But
Maybe next time we can have a classics episode. Yeah. Maybe we can talk about some old school wrestling and throw some old school songs into the playlist.
That sounds like a great plan. All righty cool. then. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. This is a long one, Al. We ended up knocking out over an hour, which isn't like us. We're normally, you know, 20, 30 minute men, but here we are.
Yeah. Here we are.
I love
the whole thing.
We did it. Absolutely. Thank you for listening, everybody. Check us out online. Where do they find you, my man?
Vinyls of Violence on Instagram. As we mentioned before, I have not done a whole lot this year, but we'll see if that changes. But that's where you could find me if you want to talk or whatever. Mm-hmm. Send me memes, send me funny videos.
He loves it. He loves it. That's all we do. And then you can check out everything Faces and Feels at Faces Feels Cast. And if you also want to hear me talk about New Japan way too much, you can check out at Ichiban Suite to check out the Ichiban Suite Cast. So there you go. That is it. There'll be another one down the road. I'm about to be on week for on leave for a week plus. So I don't know, probably in a fortnight, something like that. We'll knock something out and we'll be able to talk about all my travels there. So yeah, you know what it be, you know what it do. It's been Faces and Feels. I normally have a sign off and I was like biding time to remember what I normally say. That's it. It's all about peace, love and pro wrestling. See, I got there in the end. Peace. Thanks for listening. Faces and Feels is a proud member of the Count Out Podcasting Network. It is created and hosted by me, Rafe Houston, edited by myself and the amazing Ryan Neetze,
And the show is available on all good podcast platforms, so please go rate and subscribe. You can follow the show everywhere on social media, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, etc. at Faces Feels Cast. And you can check out the Countout Network and all our sister shows over there at Countout Pod. If you'd like to book me for commentary, have an interview request, a topic suggestion, or you just want to say hi, you can email us at facesandfeels@gmail.com. With all that said, thanks for listening, and please support our friends and sponsors. Peace.
My body is a roadmap of pain.
DeathmatchWorldwide.com, the official online merchandise store that is only for Deathmatch Wrestling. Featuring official t-shirts from No Peace Underground, John Wayne Murdoch, Akira, Madman Pondo, Zona 23, Neil Diamond Cutter, G Raver, Schlack, Necro Butcher, and many more. If you are a deathmatch wrestler, promotion, manager, or platform, and are interested in joining the web store, send us an email to deathmatchworldwide@yahoo.com. Deathmatchworldwide.com for the violent few.
This has been a Countout Podcast.
Ring Post Radio is the only show hosted by Ryan Knightsey and Scotty Edwards that talks about the entire world of professional wrestling. With new episodes coming out every Sunday, there is absolutely no reason to not listen to real, honest wrestling opinions from two crazy maniacs. Have a hot boy summer and listen along to Ring Post Radio every Sunday on the Countout Network.